Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mona Montgomery with the Holohoax. Did you know there were no gas chambers in Germany? That Hitler never intended to exterminate the Jews? And that 6 million did not die? Well, I'm going to prove it to you tonight. At least part of it. I've already proven to you, in recent broadcasts, that the Jews have lied about other things that allow you to question their veracity on these three subjects. The number of Jews who died, whether there were gas chambers, and whether Hitler ever planned to exterminate the Jews as a race. I told you about the phony stories about human Jewish skin lamp shades. I told you about the phony stories the Jews told about soap manufactured out of Jewish fat. And I explained to you that having revealed these lies to you, you were now entitled to question the veracity of the Jews on the other subject. There are other elements that allow you to question these subjects: the motives of the Jews, which is purely pecuniary, and the cover-up. Tonight we'll be discussing the cover-up. The cover-up consists of hate speech laws and laws against questioning the Holocaust that have been passed all over Europe since World War II. Presently in America, Ted Kennedy is trying to pass a hate speech law in America right here that will make it illegal for us to engage in this kind of historical research. As you know, recently Ernst Zundel, one of the world's foremost revisionists, was arrested on trumped-up charges in the United States and is presently in danger of being deported to Germany, where he'll have to go to jail for up to 5 years for publishing the truth about the Holocaust. I recommend that you read his book, Did 6 Million Really Die? The Truth at Last, which you can find on thezundelsite.org. That's www.zundelsite.org, or my website, www.monamontgomery.com. The edition on my website is easier to read because I took the time to take out all of the typographical errors, and I've published it in a larger print. But you will want to visit www.zundelsite.org to get the real feeling for this man, Ernst Zundel, by looking at his personal website. Recently, National Alliance interviewed Mark Weber, an important revisionist scholar and close friend of Ernst Zundel and his wife, Ingrid. Mark Weber sheds some light on these laws against questioning the Holocaust, which I offer to you as proof that there is definitely a cover-up regarding the Holocaust. After all, if they've passed laws that make it impossible to investigate this portion of our history, doesn't that prove that there's something about this portion of our history that they don't want us to find out?
But in Germany, as many of your listeners know, there are harsh laws that are very restrictive of freedom of speech. Anyone who, as they say, quote, denies the Holocaust, which Ernst Zundel is accused of doing, can be thrown in jail for 5 years. And it's happened in Germany and in other countries in Europe that have passed these laws, ordered to Europe and thrown in jail. Just the other week, an 82-year-old man in Switzerland was forced to start a 13-month prison sentence. Gaston Amadrus, he's an 82-year-old fellow. He publishes a little newsletter, and for so-called denying the Holocaust, he's now serving 13 months in prison, in a Swiss prison. Another man, Jean Plantin, has also been charged with and sentenced to imprisonment for his defiance of these same kinds of laws in France. And these similar laws exist in Germany, in Austria, in the Netherlands, in Belgium, and in other countries. They're palpably unjust laws because they are selective laws. They apply only to one chapter of history, that is, so-called denying of the so-called Jewish Holocaust. No other chapter of history is treated in this way. Zundel may once again go to prison for his research and beliefs or be threatened with deportation. All this is possible. Anything may happen when there is an intellectual crisis and a realignment of historical concepts on such a dimension. Revisionism is the great intellectual adventure of the end of this century.
Mark Weber says to Kevin Strom in his interview of last week that two important witnesses caved in under oath about the gas chambers.
Rudolf Verba was a well-known survivor of Auschwitz who claimed to have seen gassings of people. But in the 1985 trial in Toronto, for the first time, he was questioned very closely under oath, and Rudolf Verba collapsed, basically. He admitted that many of the claims that he had been making in a best-selling book about his experiences were false, and he resorted finally to saying, well, it's poetic license, it's an exaggeration, and basically it's a lie. But another witness, Raoul Hilberg, who is the author of a well-known standard work on the Holocaust question, he was also forced to concede things, too, that were very astonishing.
In April 1944, Rudolf Verba and Albert Wetzler escaped from Auschwitz. 2 months later, they were able to publish the Verba-Wetzler Report, providing details of conditions in the camp. The crematorium contains a large hall, a gas chamber, and a furnace. People are assembled in the hall, which holds 2,000. They have to undress and are given a piece of soap and a towel as if they were going to the baths. Then they are crowded into the gas chamber, which is hermetically sealed. Several SS men in gas masks then pour into the gas chamber through three openings in the ceiling, a preparation of the poison gas Mega Cyclone. At the end of 3 minutes, all the persons are dead. The dead bodies are then taken away in carts to the furnace to be burnt. Ladies and gentlemen, I am trying to prove to you that there were no gas chambers in Germany. I've already shown you other examples of Jewish lies regarding the Second World War. To wit, they lied about human Jew skin lampshades, which never existed. They lied when they said that Jewish fat was used to manufacture soap. And I ask you to apply the knowledge I've given you about the fact that they are liars to the stories about the gas chambers so that you might decide that they lied about these too. But fortunately, I have more evidence for you. I can prove to you that their own witnesses have admitted under oath that they were lying about the gas chambers. After the Zundel trial, Dick Chapman of the Toronto Sun had some fun with this testimony from Rudolf Verba. In his January 24, 1985 article, Dick Chapman said that while he was on the witness stand, Verba had testified that he saw a Nazi SS soldier in a gas mask pouring poison gas into a low bunker connected to a Birkenau crematorium, but that under cross-examination, he admitted he had never been inside that particular bunker. As the cross-examination progressed, Zundel's attorney got Verba to back down on another statement. He had previously claimed that thousands of women, elderly, and children were marched directly to the gas chambers upon arrival. But under cross-examination, he admitted that some of them might have been going to the camp's bathhouse. Quote, yes, some of them actually went there, bathhouse, and more went to the gas chambers, said Verba, who claimed many babies were gassed to death. When the attorney asked witness Verba about drawings he had made of the Auschwitz camp in 1944, he admitted that they were inexact and that he didn't know where the bathhouse was located. The cross-examining attorney pointed out that the bathhouse was located in such a way that in order to get to the bathhouse, a person would have to go between the two crematoria. Therefore, it would be incorrect, he would have been implying, to say that people who went to the bathhouse never came back. Obviously, they did, if they were just going to get a bath. But Verba said on the witness stand, rather unbelievably, that The area ended in a closed road, and nobody ever came out of there
except smoke.
Finally, Verba said on the witness stand that his written and pictorial descriptions of the Auschwitz crematoria and gas chambers are based on, quote, what I heard it might look like, unquote. Another witness in the Zundel trials in Canada in 1985 was Raoul Hilberg. He testified that he had been promoting himself as a Holocaust expert for 18 years, even before he visited Auschwitz for the one day that he spent there. He admitted he was not familiar with many books on the subject on which he was alleged to be an expert, and that he knew that many key parts of a confession by Kurt Gerstein as to the gassings was pure nonsense and totally false. He admitted that when presenting this Gerstein confession as proof of the Nazi misdeeds, he had edited out inconvenient sections in order to make his point. He admitted he knew of no documentary evidence that the Nazis murdered or planned to murder Jews in gas chambers. He said he knew of no autopsies that showed death by gassing, and that he knew of no scientific proof that even one Jew had been gassed. This testimony was presented in the Toronto Sun by journalist Maria Bahuslawski on January the 17th, 1985. Raoul Hilberg gained prominence as a Holocaust expert in 1973 when he wrote his famous book, The Destruction of the European Jews. Mr. Hilberg was a prosecution witness against Ernst Zundel in his Canadian trial, where he was charged with reporting false historical facts under a statute which was later found to be unconstitutional by the Canadian Supreme Court. Just as we're allowed to accept as evidence of falsification the fact that lies were told about the Jewish soap, the lampshades, and the fact that witnesses of the gas chambers changed their testimony once they were put under oath, we can also accept the lack of evidence. For example, the fact that not one single Jewish body was found in the concentration camps to have been given an autopsy, which revealed that it had died of being gassed. www.ihr.org says, quote, just as there was no material scientific proof for the existence of the devil, there is no material scientific proof for the existence of Nazi homicidal gas chambers. There are no autopsies available from any source showing that even one Jew died as a result of Zyklon B, hydrocyanic acid, poisoning, among the millions who are alleged to have been killed in this manner, an esoteric but revolutionary fact clumsily admitted by the prestigious exterminationist genie, Dr. Raoul Hilberg. Arthur R. Butz discusses the reasons for the myth regarding the Holocaust and offers evidence that the Holocaust never existed, except to the very limited degree of there being detention camps and a plan to evacuate the Jews from Germany. Mr. Butz states, I see three principal reasons for the widespread but erroneous belief in the legend of millions of Jews killed by the Germans during World War II. U.S. and British troops found horrible piles of corpses in the West German camps they captured in 1945, for example, Dachau and Belsen. Mr. Butz goes on to explain how it happened that the U.S. and British troops found these horrible piles of corpses. He says, during both world wars, Germany was forced to fight typhus, carried by lice in the constant traffic with the East. That is why all accounts of entry into the German concentration camps speak of shaving of hair and showering and other delousing procedures, such as treatment of quarters with the pesticide Zyklon. That was also the main reason for a high death rate in the camps and the crematoria that existed in all. When Germany collapsed in chaos, then of course all such defenses ceased, and typhus and other diseases became rampant in the camps, which quartered mainly political prisoners, ordinary criminals, homosexuals, conscientious objectors, and Jews conscripted for labor. Hence the horrible scenes, which, however, had nothing to do with extermination or any deliberate policy. Moreover, the West German camps involved were not the alleged extermination camps, which were all in Poland, for example, Auschwitz and Treblinka, and which were all evacuated or shut down before capture by the Soviets, who found no such scenes. The final solution spoken of in the German documents was a program of evacuation, resettlement, and deportation of Jews, with the ultimate objective of expulsion from Europe. During the war, Jews of various nationalities were being moved east as one stage in this final solution. The legend claims that the motion was mainly for extermination purposes. Arthur R. Butz, A Short Introduction to the Study of Holocaust Revisionism. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you are sitting in the virtual worldwide court of public opinion. I am conducting an appeal of the conviction of Adolf Hitler and the German people, who have been convicted of genocide, killing 6 million Jews in gas chambers. I am countersuing against the plaintiffs, the Worldwide Communist Party, for defaming my clients, presenting false information to the court in order to extort $3 trillion. And I am asking this court to award my client treble damages for the money they wrongfully obtained through this fraud and deceit in the amount of $9 trillion. I am asking that all of the farms that were stolen from the white Christians in Russia be returned to their rightful owners, and that all of the hate speech laws and the laws against questioning the Holocaust be overturned as being unconstitutional infringements on the world's right to free speech. There were no gas chambers. The communists' own witnesses are reversing their testimony now that they're facing 10 years in jail if they commit perjury, and now they've been put under oath, and now they're changing their story. Of the thousands of bodies that were dug up when the Allies freed the concentration camps, not one autopsy was performed that showed the bodies had been killed by gas. Mr. Lichter, an expert in gas chambers, has offered testimony in many courts that the so-called gas chambers could not have functioned as gas chambers, that there were no holes in the ceiling through which gas could have been poured, and that the walls of the gas chamber, the paint, and the soil surrounding the so-called gas chambers contained no gas. Furthermore, evidence has been falsely introduced to suggest gas chambers, which is totally irrelevant. The pictures of thousands of dead bodies dug up in the east of Germany, emaciated by typhus and starvation, have been used to convince you that there were gas chambers in Auschwitz. There is no connection between West Germany and Auschwitz, which is located in Poland. As for the gas chamber in Auschwitz, toured by visitors, that gas chamber was erected in 1948, after the war was over, as part of the communists' plan to deceive the world into believing that the German people, and not the communists, are the Antichrist. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I contend that the German people have been defamed. The Nuremberg trials were nothing more than a mock kangaroo court, so often conducted by communists, and the following propaganda was lies upon lies used to extort money from the world and to justify the creation of the fraud state Israel. In order to hide their crime, ladies and gentlemen, the communists have engaged in a massive cover-up, which itself is a crime upon the world. the freedom of free speech and free thought, has been chilled throughout the European nations, so that no intelligent person could ever see the truth of what they had done. I maintain that these laws against free speech and free thought constitute the worst crime the communists have committed upon the world. Yes, even worse than their attempted genocide of the white race, during which they successfully murdered 65 million white Christians. This assault on the free speech and free thought of the human race is an even worse crime. Because this crime, these hate speech laws, these laws making it illegal to research the Holocaust, or discuss it, or question it, these laws are an impediment to the evolution of mankind in his search for truth and for God. Let us now examine these anti-speech laws. There is an international law against freely speaking about the superiority of the white race, even though it's well documented that white people have frontal lobes that are 15 to 20% larger than the black frontal lobes, and there's a corresponding difference in IQ, in that the American white has an IQ of between 15 and 20 points higher than the American black, and between 30 and 40 points higher than the African black. So this law against freely discussing the differences in intellectual superiority between the races needs to be repealed. Article 20 of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights states, "Any advocacy of national, racial, or religious hatred that constitutes incitement to discrimination, hostility, or violence shall be prohibited by law." This is explained in Article 4A of the same law, where it states that all states, quote, "shall declare an offense punishable by law all dissemination of ideas based on racial superiority or hatred." Obviously, this law has to be amended to take out the phrase racial superiority, so that the law will read, "States shall declare an offense punishable by law all disseminations of ideas based on racial hatred, incitement to racial discrimination, etc., since the white race is superior to any other race, and truth needs to be told." France has laws against questioning the Holocaust. In March of 1998, a Paris court fined French philosopher Roger Garrodi $20,000 for questioning the Holocaust. The Jews were angry that he didn't put him in jail for inciting racial violence, for daring to write that, quote, "the myth of the extermination of 6 million Jews," unquote, had become a dogma justifying Israel's repression of Palestinians. Garrodi also disputed the numbers of Jews killed by Hitler and questioned the existence of gas chambers in death camps. His book, The Founding Myths of Israeli Politics, puts 84-year-old Garrodi at the forefront of the revisionist movement. Outside the courtroom, bloodthirsty anti-racists screamed, "Garrodi Nazi," and "Garrodi to prison." Dr. Robert Ferrisson was known as the father of revisionism. His attorney was Eric Delacroix. Delacroix was convicted of thought crime in France in 1996. He was convicted of, quote, "contesting crimes against humanity" for publishing his book, The Thought Police Against Revisionism. He was fined $5,300. His favorite quotation is by George Orwell. Thought crime does not entail death. Thought crime is death. In England, Public Order Act passed in 1986 states that a constable may arrest without warrant anyone he reasonably suspects is using insulting words against a person or group of people defined by reference to color, race, nationality, including citizenship, or ethnic or national origins. In other words, in England, if you are having a political discussion about the citizens of a state or the members of a race, and you make insulting or disparaging remarks about these people, you can be arrested without a warrant. In fact, you can be arrested without a warrant if you aren't making these comments, as long as an officer of the law reasonably suspects that you are, which he might do just on the basis of a lie being told about you by a political enemy. Good work, England!
As if that weren't bad enough, in 1997, England introduced a Holocaust denial bill, which would amend the 1986 Public Order Act that I just quoted. This bill was to make it a criminal offense to claim, whether in writing or orally, that the policy of genocide against the Jewish people committed by Nazi Germany did not occur. Well, we know that it did not occur. The policy of genocide, known as the Final Solution, has been exposed. The Final Solution memorandum has been translated. It does not talk about a plan to exterminate, but about a plan to emigrate and export the Jews. So, under the Holocaust Denial Bill of 1997, you're not allowed to tell the truth in England anymore. Because any words, behavior, or material which purport to deny the existence of the policy of genocide against the Jewish people shall be deemed to be intended to stir up racial hatred. You see, in England, you won't be allowed to tell the truth about the Jews because people will just naturally hate them. So, the truth is to be outlawed. A finding of racial hatred can be found in England if a person makes an explicit hostile reference to the victim's culture or religion. So you can't say Jewish communists lied about the Holocaust. Jewish communists are liars. You would have to say some people lied about the Holocaust. Racial hatred can be found in England if there is insufficient provocation for the hostile statement. So, if you should say Jewish communists lied about the gas chambers, it could be found to be not sufficiently provoked, since who cares if the Jewish communists lied about the gas chambers? Racial hatred can be found in England if the offender is known to have engaged in the past in racist or religious abuse or threats. So, if you're a Holocaust denier or a revisionist and you've been revising history and studying the history of the gas chambers in the past, and they catch you doing it now, you're guilty of racial hatred because you've been doing it for a while now. Racial hatred can be found in England if you were warned to stop and you continued to promote the truth that Jewish communists lied about the gas chambers. You can be found guilty of racial hatred in England if you are affiliated with a group that is known to promote or support racial or religious hatred. So, if you're on any of the ADL's unfavored list, you can be found guilty of racial hatred in England if you say that Jewish communists lied about the gas chambers. You can be found guilty of racial hatred in England if the victim believes that the attack or the insult was provoked by their ethnicity. So, if the Jews believe that you're attacking them for lying about the gas chambers because they are Jews, you can be found guilty of racial hatred in England. In Australia, a government-funded commission ordered the website of revisionist Frederick Tobin to be removed because he questioned whether there were gas chambers at Auschwitz. That was in October of 2000. Australia's Human Rights and Equal Opportunities Commission ordered the Institute to remove the material on the grounds that its main purpose was to humiliate and denigrate the Jewish people. So in Australia, if you search for the truth, it's assumed that your underlying purpose is evil, that you don't care about the truth at all, and that all you want to do is harm the Jewish people. The commission states, in public discourse, there is a need to balance rights and responsibilities. It is never appropriate to victimize people of a certain race in the name of freedom of speech, unquote. So, if we have a Jew running for office, I'll bet you we will not be able to campaign against him based on his record as a Jew, including the fact that he supports Israel and will put Israel's interests above those of America. Nice going, Jew. I would say that this Australian ruling shows that Australia, once the haven of the white man, no longer supports white values, which include, first and foremost, the right to free inquiry, free speech, free thought, and the truth. After the Second World War, the West German government banned neo-Nazi Socialist Reich Party, known as the SRP, which was led by Major General Otto Ernst Remmer, Hitler's former bodyguard. Thus, the voice of reason was silenced in West Germany in 1951. 2 years later, Gary Lauck was again arrested in West Germany for carrying 20,000 Nazi posters, and after serving a four-month term, was deported and banned from Germany for life. In 1974, Gerhard Lauck was expelled from Germany for giving a pro-Hitler speech. In September of 2000, Berlin cops raided more than 30 apartments in eastern Germany, confiscating more than 6,400 CDs and more than 60,000 videos and posters featuring the illegal swastika symbol. Since 1991, more than 500 neo-Nazi CDs have been produced in Germany, with distribution of up to 15,000. In 1999, 1.5 million neo-Nazi compact discs were in circulation. By 2000, German cops had in their possession a distribution list of 1,500 addresses in Germany and abroad of people designated by the German government as being neo-Nazi criminals. In a campaign reminiscent of America's war on drugs, Germany is waging a war on neo-Nazi compact discs. Al Kuhn, the webmaster of MacStand.com, makes the point that thought control is Orwellian and has no place in America.
Another area of impact is the acceptance of cross-racial crime directed against whites. The other day I heard someone say that they did not want their kids to watch television much for fear that they would see stories like the one where, quote, stupid whites dragged a black man behind a truck just because he was black, unquote. While I applaud the decision to keep the kids away from the pollution of the media, it is appalling that this person is so confused on racial crime. Most whites today have the same incorrect impression about racial crime. They think that whites harm non-whites far more than that non-whites harm us. The exact reverse is the real truth. While a dislike for crime of any sort is a healthy thing, an acceptance of falsehood is never good. To blame whites for hate crimes and you seldom, if ever, see anyone of any other race accused of such crimes. When other races are harming whites far more often than the reverse, it's insane. The only point to hate crime legislation is to attack white folks, not to stop hate. There is far more hatred of whites than by whites. This wrong-headed legislation is directed at the wrong group to do any good at all, if it could do any good at all. The whole idea of hate crime is absurd anyway. Crime is crime. Thoughts are not prosecutable in a free society. Hate crime is thought crime, and out of place in America. If you commit murder, you should pay for it no matter why you did it. But in America, murder for a politically incorrect reason is worse than for any other reason. And thanks to the intensive media propaganda campaign, white Americans are swallowing this oppression as if it were just fine.
It's hard to know what happened to poor old Germany after the Second World War to make them so crazy. But now they're trying to get the entire world to stop questioning the Holocaust. I have a feeling, don't you, that the Jews are in control of Germany and not the Germans? At any rate, these Germans, whoever they are, these people who have taken over Germany, are going to sue ISPs who publish websites that question the Holocaust, websites like mine, based on the fact that anything on the web can reach all over the globe. And since Germany's part of the globe, my ISP should not be allowed to publish my website because my website, which offends German law, can be accessed by Germany. For the beginning revisionists in the audience, there's a man who stands out in history as being a revisionist truly to make you jealous. This is former French resistance fighter and inmate of the Buchenwald concentration camp, Paul Racinier, who stated as early as 1950 that there were no gas chambers at Buchenwald. At that time, he believed that there were some gas chambers in other camps. But by 1964, he stated that the gas chambers and Jewish extermination story was the most macabre lie of all time and demonstrated the impossibility of the 6 million figure. In 1967, this giant philosopher died. He is now known as the father of revisionism. With the recent arrest of Ernst Zundel, we should have all become familiar with the book he published, Did 6 Million Really Die? This was written in 1972 by Richard Harwood. Arthur Butz, whom I've already quoted, wrote The Hoax of the 20th Century in 1976. His evidence that there were no gas chambers is that the Germans would surely have known about it and would have stopped it, but that they did not because they knew the claims of the Jewish organizations were pure war propaganda. In 1984, terrorists burned down the Institute for Historical Review in California, and in 1985, Canadian authorities burned down the Zundel House, the home of Ernst Zundel in Canada. But what about hate speech in the United States of America? We don't have hate speech laws yet, although there are some laws that say you can't incite anyone to riot, threaten anybody because of their race, or incite anyone else to violence against a group or a person because of his race. These are called hate crime laws. They're not as bad as the hate speech laws that Senator Kennedy wants to pass, similar to those in Europe. So, in the United States of America, the Jews rely on violence and threats of violence. For example, David Duke tried to speak in Virginia last week, and the hotel just canceled his reservation because every rabbi in that city had called the hotel and said that if they let David Duke speak, there would be violence. You can bet the police would be running to the hotel to protect the rights of a black man if he had wanted to make a speech, and the white people called up and intimidated him. But after all, this is David Duke. He's of no importance on the scene of American politics other than that he was once a congressman, and he's not allowed to speak. So I think it's important to try to get David Duke's message out, which was that we should not fight Iraq because it was only to benefit the Jews. I wish I could hear David Duke's speech, and I look forward to hearing it broadcast on the web soon. But in the meantime, I do have a comment by America First Pops, who discusses the same subject. Why we should not go to fight for Iraq on behalf of Israel, because it does not benefit the United States of America.
3,000 American troops are now in the Philippines fighting, quote, terrorism, okay? What's going to happen is that all of these Arab countries that we're going to decimate are going to join up together, and they're going to go, fuck this. They're going to realize that America is doing Israel's dirty work, okay? They're going to gang up on Israel, finally, okay? They're going to get it together. Israel cannot win a ground war if all of the Arab countries unite and get together. So what will happen? Okay, in 1973, when Egypt caught Israel with its pants down during the Yom Kippur War, Israel had high-level meetings, and they were actually talking about nuking Egypt, okay? Actually talking about nuking Egypt because they were losing. United States stepped in with the biggest airlift in the history of the world and bailed Israel out in 1973. The Nixon administration did that, okay? So if Israel starts losing, the nukes are going to start flying because they don't give a fuck. They do not give a fuck. Now what's going to happen? Okay? Pakistan has nukes. Nukes start getting near Pakistan, Pakistan's going to start letting the nukes fly. India going to start letting the nukes fly. Now you're getting close to China. They're going to start letting nukes fly. Russia, okay, who is a starving country right now. Iraq owes Russia billions and billions and billions of dollars. They need that money. Okay? This could very well, if we keep going through this, start World War III. And it's not going to be fucking pretty this time because of the nuclear capabilities of all of these countries and chemical and biological. There are 20 countries out there, at least, that have chemical and biological weapons. And guess what? About 10 of them are not friends of the United States. Yeah, they have those. They call them the poor man's nuke. This is an easy scenario. If we don't change our course, and we need to start taking a middle hand, we need to start being more balanced in our Middle East policy, okay? Of course it all makes sense. It's too late, Revelator. We need to take a more balanced approach to the Middle East, or it's going to be all fucking over. Keep us out of World War III if we understand what caused World War I and World War II. How dare the Arabs ask to get East Jerusalem back, somewhere they've been for thousands of years, thousands of years. How dare they ask that? Because that's what George Bush wants the Jews to do. He wants them to pull back the pre-1967 borders and dismantle the settlements.
Now, every thinking person knows that these hate crime laws are a step toward totalitarianism because we're being punished for our feelings, our thoughts. and thought control is part of totalitarianism. But my issue in tonight's broadcast is not with the specter of totalitarianism, so much with the fact that I think these hate crimes are evidence of a cover-up. I don't think that it's so much that the Jews want to control your mind, although they probably do. But I do think they have a huge investment in covering up this terrible lie they've told, that there were gas chambers, that Germans are devils, that Hitler wanted to commit genocide against these poor creatures, when the truth is, and you can just prove this to yourself by looking at the paintings and the sketches they did themselves while they were in the camps, they were simply being detained until the war was over, at which point Hitler was planning to send them somewhere. Why these lies? That's what you have to figure out. Why are they covering up the truth? Is it just money? Or do they really not want you to find out that they lied about the German people because they fear your retribution? What's going to happen to Israel when the whole world finds out that the partition plan was based on fraud? The partition plan is all Israel has to rely on for her validity. The partition plan, being the map that was designed by the United Nations in 1945 when Israel was created. And if you'll look up on your search engines partition plan Israel, you'll see a whole lot of websites that will come up, and they'll all have the same map on it. This side is Israel. This side is Palestine. The two states were created at the same time with the same stroke of the same pen. And yet Israel has violated the partition plan by going over the borders and taking over half of the land that belongs to Palestine. When you confront them on this, they have every kind of excuse. Palestinians are bad people, therefore we don't have to acknowledge their right to the land. The United Nations didn't have any authority to give us the land because God had already given it to us 2,000 years ago. Well, they attacked us. And then we got it by the spoils of war. Well, then you check that out and you go to the United Nations website and you find out that the United Nations ratified the partition plan in 1968 and that Bush is presently asking them to go back to their side of the boundaries as delineated on the partition plan. So there's this huge fight between the Jews and everybody else as to whether or not they have to go back on their own side of the border as under the partition plan. But I say that when the truth gets out about the gas chambers and the lies told about Hitler and the fact that the partition plan was originally constructed based on fraud, they aren't even going to have the right to their own side of the territory, the borders. The whole thing is a fraudulently conceived state created by fraud and therefore null and void. That's one of the reasons they don't want people to know that they lied about the gas chambers and are willing to pass these oppressive hate speech, thought speech, suspicion speech laws against everybody in the world lest they find out the truth. This is a cover-up, ladies and gentlemen of the World Appellate Court of Public Opinion. And this cover-up is proof that they lied about the gas chambers. If they did not lie about the gas chambers, why would they now not let us talk about the gas chambers? At least, if you cannot find that I have proved that there were no gas chambers, which I think I have, Surely I have opened up your eyes to the absolute necessity of overturning these hate speech laws. And if you have, please find in the favor of the German people on this one issue and make a ruling in your heart and in your mind right now tonight to question every aspect of the so-called Holocaust. Encourage your children and your friends and your family members and your politicians to do the same. We cannot live under the oppression of not being allowed to think. We must think, starting with the very thing we're told we may not think about. Think about the Holocaust. Study the Holocaust. Do not let them get away with this huge piece of our psychological well-being and vigor, because it saps the energy of a man to try not to think about something. Break the bonds of the Jew and think, question, and talk about the Holocaust. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mona Montgomery with tonight's edition of the Holohoax. See you next Tuesday night, same time, same station.